is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Oceania, I welcome Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. This vast part of the globe, the islands, the sovereign islands, the colonial islands, the peninsulas, all of this connected to a contest between empires. There is the People's Republic of China, the Chinese Communist Party, its empire, wishing to project power across the Pacific. There is the United States and its allies, Australia, New Zealand, India, Japan, the Philippines, wishing to prevent China projecting power, because once China moves in, nobody else is ever invited again. Cleo, a very good evening to you. Just when I thought it was safe to talk about other parts of Oceania, we're back to the Compact of Federated States, the three island sovereign islands who depend upon the United States for defense. That's the trade-off. And you guided me to understand that worked its way through Congress, was endorsed, the money was validated, and all is well in Marshall Islands, Federated States of Micronesia, and Palau. And then what's happened, Cleo? Let's start with the Federated States of Micronesia. What is the hesitation about an agreement that is in train? Good evening to you.
Good evening. So the Marshall Islands and Palau recognize Taiwan. The Federated States of Micronesia recognizes China. All three of them have, as you mentioned, these compacts of free association with the U.S., which gives the U.S. Very extensive defensive security rights and gives the people of those islands the right to live and work in the U.S. They're so close to the U.S., they actually have domestic U.S. postal codes. That's how tight the relationship is. But in the case of the Federated States of Micronesia, while the compacts as a whole have been signed into law in the U.S. and approved by the relevant bodies in the three countries, there are still some outstanding things to be negotiated, including, for example, those postal services, how they'll work, how extensive they are, that sort of thing. It's been in existence for a long time, but this 20-year renegotiation cycle has just come up. The Federated States of Micronesia signed off on everything. All their agreements are done. In the case of Palau and Marshall Islands, there's still a bit to be negotiated. And so the impression could be all is well with the Federated States of Micronesia. They've signed, don't worry about it. But then if you look at the week that the President Simina, just spent in China and what he came back with and how he's been essentially electioneering for a friendly governor nominee in a part of the country, you can see that the Chinese goodies have entered directly into the political bloodstream of the country. And while the U.S. may be delivering all of these major big ticket items, including $400 million for a refurbished air base it's not quite a base, but location in Yap, which is part of the Federated States of Micronesia, what counts to somebody like a president in that situation who's looking at his own reelection is whether he's got the cash to spread around to ensure his reelection, which may look like the situation now. It's kind of uncertain and it's still fluid. So it's sort of the dog that didn't bark. The U.S. might think that everything is fine, but when you look into the details, where they're traveling, who went on the delegation, what happened next, you can see that the Chinese influence is very deep, and that $400 million airfield that you're building, unless you get the political warfare part of it right, could just end up being an airfield that you're building for the Chinese, and they'll take possession in 5 or 10 years after they've really got their tentacles into the country.
Now the other two, Palau and the Marshall Islands, to my understanding, that is moving ahead correctly, but there's also a hesitation there. Based on what, Cleo?
There's just these agreements to be sorted out. The compact itself, that negotiation on the U.S. side, had a designated presidential envoy to do the negotiations. Once it passed, once it was signed by the president of the U.S., that envoy job was considered done. And so there's been a little bit of delay or confusion, I'm not quite sure what, in completing these remaining subsidiary agreements. And there was a potential visit of the presidents of those three countries to the U.S. planned for a week or 10 days from now. But because this wasn't quite finished, at least those two presidents, I think, didn't want to come because they didn't want to be put in the position where they would have to say these aren't finished, which wouldn't be good for them, wouldn't be good for the U.S., wouldn't be good for the relationship. So they'll wait until they're complete, which I think they probably will be relatively soon, and then they'll come to the U.S. after that.
A conversation with the presidents of Palau, the Marshall Islands, and Micronesia on U.S. engagement in the Pacific, scheduled for May 9th under the Australia chair of a U.S. think tank, all arranged and then called off. Why?
Well, because those agreements really weren't complete in the case of two out of the three. And so they didn't want to be the presidents didn't want to be in a position of having to bring that up. They'd prefer to, as the event was intended, look forward to what next. So I think it's just postponed, but it was definitely unfortunate that that wasn't cleared up before the announcement was made. Anyway, we'll see what happens now. But, you know, it's a bit of a byproduct of this issue of the lack of people in the U.S. who are following this issue closely. The compact calls, for example, for more people at the State Department to be put specifically on the Freely Associated States unit at State. And if that had been fully staffed, then maybe this sort of thing wouldn't have happened. The relationship, just because the agreement is signed, that really doesn't. It doesn't mean anything about tomorrow. It means that a disaster was averted, but these relationships need constant attention, care, thought, engagement, or else these sort of things happen. So this was not a big deal, but it is an indication that unless the pieces that were not in place that allowed this to happen aren't put in place, you could end up with a bigger problem down the line.
Let me describe what I've understood, thanks to Cleo's teaching, is the critical nature of these three sovereign states. I spend a deal of time worrying about the PLA Navy and its projection of power to overwhelm Taiwan, possibly to pull apart the Philippines, certainly to make war on Japan. I'm describing a catastrophe. I spend a deal of time in the first island chain. Cleo is addressing the second island chain, maybe even as far as Hawaii. If you look at your map of Oceania, the Pacific, from Hawaii to the Philippines, from Hawaii to the Philippines and Japan, Marshall Islands, Federated States of Micronesia, and Palau, bang, bang, bang. Any one of those in the hands of an adversary means that you cannot reinforce. You cannot project power on day two of the end of the world. That is why everyone is looking at these three island states not as plums to be picked, but in fact as critical nodes in the event of, and we're told every day, in the event of war with the People's Republic of China. Now, it gets much more fun because it's more complicated. We go to the Northern Marianas, which is the U.S. territory, north of here. And the Northern Marianas has a very famous island called Saipan and another very famous island called Tinian. You might remember them. They cost a lot of lives to take from the Imperial Japanese, and then they were converted into airfields for B-29s. Right now, there's an airfield at Saipan. Doing what, Cleo? What's the Saipan airport seeing even as we speak?
Right. So this year is the 80th anniversary of the battles for Saipan and Tinian, as you mentioned. And it's worth noting that CNMI, part of the U.S., and the three countries we just talked about, Palau, Marshall Islands, and Federated States of Micronesia, were all part of the Japanese mandate Japanese controlled them from 1914 to 1944. It's what allowed the Japanese to project power, as you mentioned, all the way across the Central Pacific and be in a position to hit Hawaii. So CNMI's history is very tightly intertwined with the three freely associated states. The U.S. is in the process of putting in hundreds of millions of dollars of a refurbishment on the Tinian airfield. Tinian is a small island. It's shaped a little bit like Manhattan. So when the Seabees got there, they named all of the streets after Manhattan Street. So there's a Broadway and there's a Central Park, and it's quite something. Small population. But there's, of course, now a Chinese-linked casino right on the tiny harbor in Tinian, where some of the supplies for building that airfield will be coming and going. And this is very emblematic of the entire situation across that region, where Department of Defense has been very focused on building up kind of hard power assets, the airfields, the ports, communications, things like that. Whereas China is looking at that, but it's also working on the political warfare battlefield, getting on the ground into the government, being in a position to buy people off. And a big element of that in the Commonwealth of Northern Marianas is that is the only jurisdiction in the United States where people can arrive from China without a visa. And they've just started on the 29th of April, direct flights from Hong Kong to Saipan, where the Chinese citizens coming off that plane are landing without a visa. They've already been found to be doing things in the past. This visa situation has been going on for a while, like illegally buying U.S. driver's licenses, illegally getting on boats and going to Guam, where some have been found wandering around U.S. military installations, using the U.S. Postal Service to distribute drugs and various other very dangerous and illicit activities.
They're flying to Saipan. That's what you said. That's
where, direct from Hong Kong to Saipan.
That's where the casino that used to be exists, with a fountain that's broken, with windows that are soaked over. So what is their explanation for going to Saipan? Because they're going to take a boat to Tinian for the casino? Why are they there?
Well, to be fair to Saipan, it is beautiful, and it does have nice beaches and good diving and all that sort of stuff. But tourism,
no casino, casino.
No casino at the moment, but that casino, which at one point was running more money than the casinos in Macau, was running billions of dollars through tiny little casino, and I think can quite rightly be suspected to be a money laundering operation at massive scale, which is a whole other issue. Chinese tourism is politically directed. That's how they try to build up and then crash the Palau economy, for example, in order to try to get it to de-recognize Taiwan. So this is clearly for economic leverage. That there's a very honest governor in CNMI now who wants to close the Chinese loophole. He wants to diversify tourism. But by addicting the business sector to the Chinese money, they're hoping to undermine his position and keep that loophole open.
Cleo Pascal, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We race to the Solomon Islands. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.